Hello, friends, and welcome to the Experience Grind podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences we've gained along the way through movies, TV, games, music, pop culture, all that good stuff. I'm your host this week, Brian, and we are going to be talking about But I'm a Cheerleader, a fun little 90s LGBTQ movie that's just the epitome of camp, and we'll dive deeper into that. But first, joining me as always are my boys in blue. He knows foreplays for sissies. Real men go in, unload, and pull out. It's Ryan.
Man, I actually thought about incorporating this into my response back to you, regardless of what you said to me. So now I am at a complete loss. Except yeah, I'm not that man. Ryan, I wish I could be that man. I'm not that man.
You wish you could be?
It's what manly men do, right?
Yeah, manly men.
Yeah.
And if I catch him looking at another man like that ever again, he'll be watching sports the whole weekend. It's Kyle.
Oh, yeah, man. Please don't make me watch men grappling shirtless in MMA.
And I thought it was just an act, but he really is sweet as fucking pie. It's Sean.
I'm a homosexual.
Jesus Christ.
There it is.
Happy Pride, everybody!
Happy Pride. Oh, man. But before I go in and tell you what But I'm a Cheerleader is all about, first I want to tell you about Kevin Crumb, a man with multiple personalities who kidnaps three girls while several of his identities work to unleash a terrifying new persona known as the Beast. As the girls attempt to escape, the Beast emerges as a seemingly superhuman figure who kills several people before disappearing back into the world. Real bombshell comes in the final scene when patrons at a diner discuss the case and compare Kevin to a notorious criminal from years earlier. The camera then reveals David Dunn, played by Bruce Willis, watching the news and recognizing the comparison to Mr. Glass. In that moment, the audience learns that Split was secretly a sequel to Unbreakable all along, setting up a showdown between Dunn, the Beast, and Mr. Glass in Glass.
Every week, I forget that this is coming. Even the weeks that I do, that I spoil it. And every week, I'm like, what is happening? And then part of me, there's a twinkle in my chest.
Yeah.
I love this bit so much, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Just spoiling movies from 10 years ago.
Because I also forget that we're doing it, even though we just discussed it. And I'm like, what is he? Oh, yeah.
As soon as dawned what was happening, I was like, Split, let's go. What a pick. What a fucking pick.
All right. Now that that's out of the way, let's talk about But I'm a Cheerleader. Cheerleader Megan seems to have the perfect all-American life. But when her family notices she'd rather admire the cheer squad than kiss her football player boyfriend, they stage an intervention and ship her off to True Directions, a conversion therapy camp run by the terrifyingly enthusiastic Mary Brown. At camp, Megan is subjected to a parade of increasingly ridiculous straightening out exercises involving gender stereotypes, role-playing, and enough pink and blue nonsense to wallpaper a small country. While trying to play along, she grows close to fellow camper Graham, who is far more comfortable with her sexuality. Their friendship turns into a romance, leading Megan to realize there's nothing wrong with who she is. When the camp discovers the relationship, Megan refuses to deny it and is kicked out, while Graham stays behind out of fear of losing her family's support. Determined not to let Graham disappear back into the closet, Megan crashes the camp's graduation ceremony and performs a heartfelt cheer routine declaring her love. Graham finally chooses herself over her family's expectations, and the two leave together while Megan's parents awkwardly begin learning acceptance.
Yeah, that is exactly what happened.
That is
sucks, by the way.
The cheers.
You guys
not
never
good.
Answered me in the Discord, which, people listening, if you're not in there, experiencegrind.com/disc. Actually, I don't think there's a slash. Just click on the link. Come join us.
Just click.
But have you guys seen They Them?
No, I didn't see
it. I was going to make Kevin a joke Bacon, right?
It has Kevin Bacon in it. Yeah.
I only saw a cover of it, I think, scrolling through Amazon, and it felt like it was in the height of a bunch of it's probably right before fucking Trump got elected, honestly, that I saw it. I was like, I'm not in the mood for this right now. Like, I can't hear any kind of negative take on this or any kind of cynical shit. and it might not be cynical, but did you see it? Is it a recommendation?
Yeah, I saw it. It's from 2022. Like you said, it's got Kevin Bacon in it. Not a lot of other names that anyone would know. It was fine. It was this movie very much so just the theme of sexual orientation camp, like gay camps and stuff like that, think of this again. And like that movie, man, okay, it's fine. Well, it's bad. It's exactly what you expect. It's fine though. It's entertaining. Whatever.
To get back,
it's not great.
Brian, I'm curious why this one? I mean, other than we've started an unofficial Pride Month theme.
We have.
I've never heard of this.
Unofficial Pride Month. This is one that I heard about a while ago and it's kind of always been on my list of things to check out.
Okay.
Just because it's like a famously campy, low budget movie that is pretty revered amongst the LGBTQ community. So I wanted to.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Check it out and see what it's all about.
I've heard of it. I've heard of it, never seen it. Sarah saw it. As soon as I mentioned it, she was like, oh, I love that. Or maybe she didn't say I love that movie, but she definitely said, oh, I've seen that. That's a good movie.
So, I'm right there with Brian. Excited. It's been on my list to see forever. I've heard it recommended in like a bunch of indie cult circles. And I honestly, like a lot of the cast really speaks to me too. It was just, an inevitability.
One of those, I was honestly shocked I've never heard of this. So
I'm a little surprised too.
Really?
So. Yeah.
This is like, this was completely off your radar, like altogether.
Never heard of it. Never even thought about it. Whoa. Nothing.
This movie to me screamed like Kyle watched this all the time in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. Almost in like a Bring It On sense. Like I'm surprised.
It's got
like
real Kyle throwback vibes. Yeah.
Write, it's very John Waters coded, and I think
yes.
Based on Brian's B-movie show, I'm probably also the only John Waters fan in the group.
I'll put a pin in that. I think that's on the nose.
Yeah, so I wrote that, but that's maybe also, I would say I have some John Waters-esque vibes.
Big time.
So.
Admitted here, first, folks.
Yeah, I guess we just get started with the story.
Yeah.
Anybody have hankering to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
I don't know what it is. I enjoy the shit out of a story like this. The story I enjoyed beginning to end. There's some parts in it that just felt a bit loose, story wise. Like the whole, I don't know. I don't think you get enough of everybody picking up like her orientation early in the movie. It's like, okay, we just go into this movie and just everybody in her life knows and she doesn't know that they know. There's like there's no hints kind of outwardly to them outside of the only hint that's given to us by the kissing of her boyfriend in that hilarious scene. That made me laugh. But yeah, she has like the poster on her locker. But that's like it. So that's like the only real quibble I have with this. I do enjoy the whole like you're sent to camp for something, whether it be summer camp, fat camp, gay camp, like whatever camp it is. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man.
Any camp, huh?
Any camp.
Movies are great.
Camp movies are great. I don't know why you're laughing, but yeah, I'll probably enjoy that movie. Yeah, I'm gonna give this a 4. I enjoyed the heck out of the story, and I want to hear what Ryan's got to say.
I'm right there with you. I really like the story. I like the script a lot. I think the dialogue's really actually kind of funny. I kind of agree with you. I agree with you that I think there's a lot of looseness in this movie. I kind of like that looseness, though, and it is loose, and I completely agree with what you're saying, but I think it kind of works to the benefit of the characters, maybe more so than the story, but like it lets you really just take your time with the characters, and I think this is why it's going to be a 4 for me here, is I think it's a lot of heavy lifting in the dialogue, in the lines. Because I laughed at this movie quite a bit, as opposed to, like, I Love You, Philip Morris last week, which I think was also trying to do, like, maybe a bit of both, like, having it, like, we're going to do, like, this romance and love story, but also have, like, some laughs. And I don't think the laughs really worked there for me. But, like, this week, they worked for me. I think it all kind of worked. But, like, specifically, I think the humor was good. I don't think any of it was, like, really mean-spirited. Like, I kind of felt at a few certain points last week with I Love You, Philip Morris. Like, the guard specifically really keeps sticking with me, and like his overuse of the F word, and like we're supposed to just take that for laughs, and like that's it. Then there's never ever a pushback on it. Whereas like the people who do that in this movie are very clearly made out to be the villain. So I think they've got all of this down, I think, a little bit better. I'm at a 4. It's not maybe the most creative or original or inventive story, which is why it's not a 5 and it's over the top, but I think it's really, really strong. So 4 feels good. Kyle.
First of all, and I can't believe I'm doing this, but defending Philip Morris and the guard use of the F word, that's not a guard, that's another inmate who's like working there. And two, that's just prison talk. Like, gay guys get called that, just like black dudes and white dudes, and like it's just that's the way that go. I'm not saying it's great, but that fit within that context. Like, anyways, moving on. I can't believe I'm defending that, because completely opposite of that and my feelings last week, really, really enjoyed the love story presentation in this film. Much, much more believable, much more authentic. I really loved the blossoming aspect of it. It was the young love aspect, which I guess I still identify with more maybe than just the crassness of the Philip Morris romance. But again, the context is it's prison where things are just gonna happen much quicker. I just still felt the chemistry between Natasha Lyonne and Homegirl much better. It's very rude to call her that, but I can't remember her name, and I'm going to lose my momentum. So, but anyways, I've been really trying to think of like reclassifying how I score the movies, and I don't like having 3 as my baseline, because I feel I default to 3 a lot, and I don't know. So I was thinking about 1, but 1 feels too extreme. So I'm going to try making 2 my baseline, and by saying that, I'm going to still give story a 4, because I really did enjoy this too. It's for 1999, the themes and complexities it's tackling in the mature way it does. Number 1, I believe I did read the director is also a lesbian, so she gets it. Mm-hmm. She comes from an authentic place to it. Almost, I would imagine she maybe did get put through a conversion therapy at some point. I didn't research that much. But it definitely, she's familiar enough with the horrors of this shit. But it's crazy to present it in a humorous way. And I was laughing at Sean's, like, enjoyment of all camps. And I'm like, oh yeah? Even conversion fucking therapy camp? Where you have to zap your own clit with electricity because you experienced joy from thoughts of sexual activity? I was just laughing
at that. Did you think I meant something else when I said gay camp?
No, I took it further to Holocaust camp, and then I was laughing.
I know.
I was trying to figure out too.
I'm sorry. It's just terrible. Anyways, 4 though. Although, I'll save that for characters because it fits better there. I did say John Waters coded. I do love the low budget shit, and maybe I'll touch on this in style too. But there's a lot of first person view camera in this that is really effective at presenting the story viewpoint. So I want to mention it here. It really puts you in a lot of times Natasha Lyonne's character. Overall, awesome. A 4. Brian, take us home, daddy.
Yeah, I'm there with you guys. 4 for me. I agree with Sean's sentiment about camp movies. This is like heavyweights for gay kids.
Yes, dude.
Where you realize at the end that it was okay to be gay the whole time. yeah, this Jamie Babbitt, the director, she is a lesbian. Her mother actually ran a recovery program for teen addicts. She always wanted to do a movie about like the 12-step recovery process, but she was not very familiar with conversion camps. But she did work with Brian Wayne Peterson, who wrote the movie, and he does have experience with those camps. So this does come from an authentic place, though wildly stylized. And I agree that it is loose, but I think it works for this presentation. I don't really have anything to add to what you guys said. It's a 4. And then we're going to move on to characters. And I'm going to kick this one off. I'm going to start us with characters. And I'm going with a 5 here. I really like these characters. I think they are believable, well thought out, if not kind of caricaturistic, but in a way that's intentional. Everything about this movie is over the top in a certain way to kind of drive a point home. And you have certain characters that are very caricaturesque, but I feel like it's done intentionally. And then there's some where you get a twist, like Jan, who is the really butch lesbian girl at the camp, who eventually just says, "I'm not even gay. Why am I still here?" And she leaves, and I think that's fantastic. I also love having RuPaul in this movie playing a former gay. One of the Letterboxd reviews I saw just said, "Where's RuPaul's Oscar for the line, 'I myself was once a gay'?" And that's just phenomenal. So yeah, it's a 5 for characters for me. I love the romance between Megan and Graham, Natasha Lyonne and Clea DuVall, I think is great. And those are your two leads. And even to the level of some like the minor characters, like Megan's father, who's kind of like a pushover the whole movie. And then you get that last scene where he's excited to be at that parents' meeting and her mom is still kind of a awful human being. But 5. And I'm going to throw it to Kyle.
I hate you because you took all the good RuPaul stuff, but you didn't say the one thing I was going to say, which was, even at his attempt at his most butchest, manliest character, RuPaul is still the most effeminate character and biggest queen in this entire movie. I love him.
That's a good He's joke. Great. Good joke.
It was a good. You got that. He does own the fucking screen, Ryan, because come on, it's Ru goddamn Paul, and that's where I'm saying he's the biggest queen, because he is. He's fucking amazing in this. The characters do a lot. Honestly, I'm very impressed with Natasha Lyonne in this. She's kind of hit or miss with me, to be honest, and I think this was like kind of her first big thing. But she does really fucking well, man. Even for like, maybe it's because this is pre-Trainwreck too, but she's just that cringy cute enough. She really encapsulates the innocence of like that sort of vaguely 50s-ish thing I think they're going with here. And I really liked, God damn it, Homegirl.
What is her name?
Clea DuVall. Clea DuVall. Thank you. She's great in fucking everything, though. I first heard of her or saw her in the show called Carnival on HBO, where she is amazing in that. And like you guys kind of said, it's stereotypical. It's crazy to me this isn't a John Waters movie, because like it's just some parts are so damn heavily coded. I think if it was maybe... trashier is not the right word, but more garish. But goddamn, she makes the fucking guy do solitary confinement in like a miniature mansion.
No, like, she goes, "You're either going to do this or you're going to the doghouse." And she literally put him in a doghouse.
Yeah, it's like, it's crazy. It's like the fanciest.
God.
I don't know where to put this. Godly scene. I guess it's not here. I'll put it somewhere else. But I do have some complaints, but they don't fit here for characters. Because overall, I like the characters. I'm not as high as a 5. I think I'm also a 4 in characters as well. So I got nothing else to add. And I'll kick it to Ryan, who put a pin in something.
The pin will come for director or style, because it's specifically about okay. the reference to John Waters. Oh, sure,
I
get.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean it's a character trait.
I mean I know.
Yes,
I mean if we're gonna talk about John Waters in the same context as characters, I think the characters here are much better. I agree with both of you so far. They're very archetypal. Like they have, it's almost and. That it feels very authentic that it was written from a guy who came from one of these camps. Like, it does seem like the different types of people you meet at conversion camp and like the very different things. And I think it's a good way to make it feel inclusive. Like, yeah, you're heard, you're part of this, even if like you're represented here. And that, I think you brought up Jan. I think that was a very good point. I thought that was heartbreaking. the whole, just because I'm not pretty and I'm ugly, people just immediately lump me in as a lesbian. I want dick. And like, it's really, it's kind of, it's funny, but it's also really sad. And I think they're able to do that with these archetypal characters. And I think that shows such a strength of understanding the characters and honestly being true to the characters. The villain is obviously Mary, Kathy Moriarty. Kind of loved her in this role. I think she was perfect in the same way, like, again, great reference to Heavyweights, how Ben Stiller is like such a good antagonist and like kind of campy and over the top. I think Kathy Moriarty rides it just the right line the same way. I think she is equally campy but also like very, very sinister in her motives and what she's doing. I think all around this is a great cast. I love this cast. I kind of had an inclination I was going to really enjoy this going into it. But, like, even, like, the surprises, like, Dolph, the Rufio from Hook Rufio. Showing up. And, like, actually being surprisingly moving and part of the story. I was very, very, very pleased with the cast here. This is a 5 for me and almost bordering on a bonus point. I really, really like this cast a lot.
I did have Bull from Night Court.
That was another fun surprise. And his partner is like a really sweet. I'd watch a whole movie of just those two and what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, again, like the characters are so good. So
we need more Wesley Mann very high movies, five. Period.
Do you Sean. Guys think that Wesley Mann and Leslie Mann are related?
They're the same person.
Oh. No.
Yeah. I've never seen them in a room together.
Leslie Mann.
Do you think that she went to this camp and came out as Leslie?
Mm-hmm.
And he got married to Judd Apatow immediately afterwards.
I feel like, man, it's so funny you ended with Kathy Moriarty because I really wanted to talk about her and how much I enjoy her, how much I love her in this role and how much I love this character, but also at the same time, literally when she's not on the screen, all I'm thinking about is how she probably murdered a little boy in a mansion named Casper, and like I could not
immediately
stop.
As soon as I heard her voice, I clocked it. I was like, oh god, that's the Casper villain.
I could not stop thinking about Casper every time I heard her voice, and I couldn't separate her from that character. It was so weird. So that was a big hang up for me, even though I loved her in this role. Anytime I heard her and I couldn't see her, it was terrible. RuPaul absolutely fucking crushed this. Any scene with Rock, Mary's son in it, is great.
when he has the pole and he's got it in between. Goddamn. So juvenile, so fucking funny.
Every scene with him felt like... I don't know. You know the beginning of Happy Gilmore where he's just like putting something between his legs and just like humping the air? It was like a less immature version of that. Like it felt like it was that, but done kind of well every single one of his scenes because it was the same thing every time. And it was fucking fantastic. I think Clea DuVall killed it while being, the late 90s version of Kristen Stewart. And Natasha Lyonne was great. And it's weird to hear her in a role where she doesn't sound like she just gargled with a bucket of rocks. So it's like, it's a little weird, but I loved her character. I thought it was great. I thought Melanie Lynskey was amazing as Hillary. The cast here was absolutely solid. If you don't know who Catherine Town is, like, look her up, because that is not what I anticipate her looking like today based on this goth look in this movie. That was, yeah, Kyle's reaction said it all. I
thought, why did they make her do this shitty Australian accent? And I just Googled and she's actually from New Zealand. And I'm like,
oh, Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I thought that the whole time she was on screen and it's actually just her accent.
Dog.
I just looked up Catherine Town and
yeah,
I agree with you, Sean.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
She was in
If Evolution. You're searching at home, folks, it's Town with recognition.
Sure was.
Yep. This cast ruled. This is a lot of fun. And Kyle, you mentioned his parents, like his dad at the end in the mid-credit scene and his mom just hiding in the most ridiculous outfit you've ever seen. Broke me. It was so funny. But can we also talk about how Natasha is, or how Megan is just a filthy fucking snitch and hey, like only comes around she when it jealous. Benefits her? Like, you're a dirtbag. You're a filthy fucking snitch. This whole movie. While also going behind and getting hanky panky behind closed doors. But she'll snitch on you in front of people. Fucking worst. She's a cheerleader.
But I'm a cheerleader.
Man, I'm glad I remembered to bring that up. That was like really annoying me. I'm like, you're a filthy, dirty little snitch. Getting dudes kicked out. Like, come on.
Yeah. Just that immediate scream when she catches him.
Yeah. Am I done? Or was there another
Did you person? Give a number?
I think so. I think I gave a 5.
Oh, there. Stop. Okay. I did not hear a 5.
Neither did I.
Did anybody hear me? Listeners, did you hear me say that? Go to one of our pages and type it. Or better yet, go to experiencegrind.com. Click on the Patreon link and give us $5 and tell us in a comment there.
That's definitely the way to guarantee we'll see it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I want to acknowledge it. Go to Discord.
Speaking of Dante Basco and Rufio and Hook, we talk a little bit about Hook on this week's Patreon episode. So
we did. Mm-hmm. Kind of a so lot of bit about
talked Hook a lot about Robin Williams reason. And Nick Cage and
a lot
check
of
that out. Cage. Our next category is style, and I want Ryan to lead this one off.
All right, so I think I'll do my pen here, and which is to say, yeah, I think a lot of this is very John Waters coded. I think that's very fair to say. I have not seen anything else Jamie Babbitt's done. I have seen
you
at
probably
least.
Have, you just don't know it.
That's, you know, that is a possibility.
She's done a ton of TV.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good to know. I responded knowing really this is like my only piece of Jamie Babbitt media in a way that I've never responded to any John Waters movie ever. And I've seen several John Waters movies at this point. So for me, this is another case of it's a shame that that old white man got much more attention than this very, very talented lady who I think is doing his thing, but better. I really, really, really resonated with the style here. I love the color palette. I love a lot of this. I think it's very indie. It's very low budget. They obviously don't have like a lot for like expensive crane shots and like zoom ins and stuff. But I think there are a lot of really cool editing tricks and things they do. Kyle mentioned the first person view cameras. I think they do a lot with what they have. And I think the style is very, it's not only very memorable, and it pops in a way like Wes Anderson stuff kind of pops too. But more than Wes Anderson's, I think it does have meaning here. There's a reason why everything is color-coded the way it is. It's all like very explicit. and it just leans into it in the perfect way. The scene that Kyle popped into our chat earlier that was just like, I think I love this movie, where it's Rock doing a bunch of shit with like these very, very innuendo laden cutouts that are just like supposed to be trees or whatever. It's these small little touches that just like really make this thing. So I am, again, very high here. The question is it going to be a 4 or 5? And so I do kind of wish somebody else went so I could judge the temperature of the room, but I'm, you know what?
Set the temperature.
I'm going to go a very, very strong 4. I'm not going to be a 5. I'm going to restrain myself because there's room to grow here, obviously. But I do, again, I really respect what was done for the budget. I really love how this looks a lot. And with that, I'd like to hear what Sean has to say.
It's a camp movie. It's got nice colors. It's got decent music. Yeah, so those are some points I just wanted to bring to the table. But also, Ryan was talking about like the directing style and stuff. I want to give a quick shout out to like the scene composing in this, because this isn't really many sweeping shots or anything. It's a lot of really static shots, and you get shots and scenes that kind of are repeated through the film, like the back alley at Cocksuckers. The composure of the scenes is just so good that you don't feel like it's not really zooming in, it's not really zooming out, it's not really doing anything for these prolonged periods of time. And yet it will cut in or whatever, but it's a lot of really prolonged shots on there that they do come back to. And I think it was so well done that that's just really standing out to me. And I think that's really great. I am going to ding a point, because this is technically style. Those plastic suits that the dudes were wearing at the end of the movie is a fucking crime. I don't care. I'm going to ding it a point and then give it a bonus point. So it's 5. I want to hear from Brian. Or Ryan. He was buzzing out on the other end when he remembered.
He did
Ryan wants to, don't you worry.
I will just say, okay, you can go ahead and preemptively bump me up to a 5 because I forgot what Kyle will talk about.
Okay. Brian.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with both you guys. I see your John Waters and I raise you a Tim Burton.
Sure.
This is very Pee-wee Edward Scissorhands vibes going on here. Mm-hmm. Clearly there is a John Waters influence here, but I do think there's some Tim Burton-esque things happening as well. And I agree with Sean, there's not a lot of camera movement, but it's mostly static shots, but the scene composition is so good that it you hardly notice it. And just overall, I'm loving what they're doing with colors and like the flat palette and just the obscene choices they make with costumes and just all around. I'm digging this. This is a 5 for style for me. And then Sean looks like he has something to add.
I mean, you made a really good point here, and maybe I should save this director, but I agree. They really should have thought about just having Tim Burton direct this instead of the lesbian director.
That is what Brian was saying. I'm glad totally you made that very clear for the audience.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. That was a really good with that dude. I couldn't agree more.
Kyle, bring us home.
I don't know why I do this a lot. I feel so combative. But to counter Ryan, the reason you have heard of John Waters and you have not heard of Homegirl 2, God damn it, such a disrespectful.
Jamie Babbitt
is
Kyle, advocate of women.
Yeah, I you'd remember 100%. Tim Burton.
This is what a feminist
Kyle loves looks. His homegirls.
I'm sorry. I was just too good to not fucking nail that one right home right there, fellas. I'm sorry. But because he filmed somebody eating literal dog shit, and that people are going to talk about that, man. Like, Jamie Babbitt's a good director. I'm not knocking it, and I'm going to give her her flowers when we get there. But I'm not as high on style as you fellas. And maybe I'm not trying to compare it to John Waters, but I do feel it doesn't swing as far. I like the color palette, but I still feel it's overall sort of muted, and maybe that's more of the low-budget lighting style, but again, that's just personal choice, and I'm not knocking it for that. What I am knocking it for, and I guess this is probably still maybe petty, and it is low-budget, but goddamn, the ADR in this movie is abundant, and the problem I had with it specifically, and it could have just been the stream, but it seemed like every ADR was just about a half second off of where it should have been when they were redubbing. So it was very obviously stuck out to me that it was a line added in later. Again, it's a small thing. And I also, the only thing I wanted to mention, and I will kick it to Ryan because he will give it much more praise, because all I wrote down is the soundtrack is by Lilith Fair.
Yeah.
So I'll return my time momentarily. Ryan, give the soundtrack some love, because I'm not giving it much, and it should get some.
Oh, man, I got to pull up my history while I talk, because I had the IMDb opened for the soundtrack, because I actually went through and looked up several tracks. I'm like, I'm going to listen to this artist. I'm going to listen to this artist. I'm going to listen to this one. I think a lot of them really click me, that the movie opens with April March's Chick Habit, the song that you probably know from the end of Death Proof, where they're all like beating Kurt Russell to death, and then it cuts to like this really weird 60s song. That's what starts this movie, and it's like the perfect tone setter. But I think when I knew, like, I just loved everything it was doing. It's Lilith Fair, the soundtrack, which is 100% my vibe.
Soundtrack by Lilith,
dude. Tattletale. There's like the romance song between Clea DuVall and whoever. I can't. What's that? Is that, does it say Lilith Fair?
It says soundtrack by Lilith Fair. Yeah.
Oh, I believe you. I believe that was your first note. I don't doubt that. But this sweet, sweet little song, I can't think of the name of it. Oh, no, it's right here. Glass Vase Cello Case. It's got these really lovely strings in it, and it's one that like bring back several times because it becomes like kind of the love motif, and it's just fucking beautiful. I forgot the soundtrack. That soundtrack is enough to bump me up to a 5. I love everything this movie's doing stylistically.
The opening song jumped out in my head. I'm like, you got to mention music and style, because this is starting strong.
To reclaim my time, one other little note that I liked, and I don't know if it was even intentional, because they never focus on it, and I didn't even see it till the end of the movie when she's running away from the place. But I love that the grass around the house is a very bright green, almost like they painted it. And then there's like a very defined limit where that stops, and then it's just the regular dead grass again. And I like how that was really encapsulating the fakeness of the camp itself, how it's all bullshit, completely made up, so fucking fake. You also get that with, I love that the beds all have like the plastic covering over them. It just felt so sterile and fake and artificial. Great little things here. It's not a perfect for me. I'm not as high as you guys. I'm 4s down the board so far, though. It's another 4 for me. So I don't hate it. I think it nails a lot of things. Like, I really love those first person viewpoints. There's the one where like she's literally walking behind the New Zealand girl, and it's just the way it's like rocking and everything. So I love that low budget feel of this stuff. 4.
All right. And we're going to roll right into direction then. And I think, Kyle, we're going to have you kick this one off, since you're already
director.
On the roll.
So this is the one, I'm glad I'm taking this one, because I can also say, on the whole, I am not the target audience for this movie. But I still enjoyed this movie a lot. And I think, number one, that is a sign of a very good director to take such an this is probably not the right word, but such maybe an esoteric subject, or just a subject I'm not in the culture of, but familiar with. But again, like, this movie is not made for me, but I understand the message of the movie and I understand the reasoning, and maybe it's because I'm also empathetic, but I think overall it's cute, really, the way a lot of this is presented. It's also very harsh. I could not get over the girl that shocks the fucking pleasure out of herself repeatedly. That was some brutal shit, man. And some, like,
she's
the way
also
it's
an admitted
cutesy
masochist.
Yeah,
and that, I think that I was like just that too.
Like, so I think,
I mean, I think that is, but it's also like the reason behind the tool is the real reason she says, which is fucking insane. And the way that it presents its the heavy subject matter in a humorous way, like in our Patreon, when I said Ryan is the Nicolas Cage movie World Trade Center, you could take a heavy subject and present it humorously. And this movie does that very well. It skirts that line. And I think it's aided because it is a lesbian director. She lives this. Like, it would be fake, I feel, coming from somewhere else. To a degree, not overall, because, man, it's personal. I think Ang Lee nails it with Brokeback, but there's arguments against it the other way. So, anyways, it's really hard to not... She does so much, man, with so little, which we also give so much praise for. I don't know what it's scored or what its like budgetary return was. I can't imagine it did well as a gay movie in the 90s. But for me, really impressed, to be honest. I think I'm at a 5. Weirdly enough, I really like this movie. I don't have a lot of negative, like, I'm nitpicky about ADR, but it does it well. Yeah, fuck it. She's well done, lady. 5. Look at me. I'm such a pretentious prick. I bet came
good
off
job,
way
homegirl.
Well done, homegirl. You get a 5 say from me, name. The straight white guy that's judging you. Well done. Shawnee boy, take the foot out of my mouth.
Yeah, it's going to take some work. Somebody had mentioned earlier that they hadn't really seen her do a lot, Jamie Babbitt, after that. Interestingly enough, peeking through her credits, Only Murders in the Building, she did a lot of that. That's great. Oh. There was another
show,
Russian
Doll. She did one of my favorite
Doll.
Always Sunny episodes.
Well, that makes sense with Natasha Lyonne.
Exactly, because she created it. So it's really cool to see 20 years later, she came back as a director for that. Only a couple of episodes, but it is what it is. Where does box office fall in the categories for people who
wherever
know it
you
better
want
than
it
me?
To?
Yeah, man.
Sick.
I can tell you right now, this movie had a budget of $1.2 million and ended up making $2.6.
Okay.
So it did.
That's not bad on an indie.
Did okay. You know what happened here, guys? We've talked about this before. Natasha Lyonne is the Josh Gad that worked. You know, you had Michelle Williams right there, and she's not even on the cheat sheet. You know, she was arguably probably a more marketable person, but they went with the lesser marketable person, and the movie didn't do very well.
Michelle Williams could get away. From what I read,
which
she was doing Dawson's Creek,
which is of no fault of the director Jamie Babbitt. That's on the casting director. So you know what? I can't really fault Jamie Babbitt for that downfall, because this movie was great. This ruled. I loved everything. Was intentional in this, even though there's a little bit of loosey goosey stuff early. Kyle pointed out with the grass and the lawns, like. Everything in this is very intentional, and that level and that attention to detail, especially in a movie that is comprised so much of static stuff, it really goes a long way of you don't need to be sweeping if the longer you're looking at something, the more you notice. And I think the attention to detail in that is so, so wild. I'm really surprised that she doesn't have a ton of massive stuff. It's a lot of like series direction. Because I feel like after watching this, she had chops to do stuff. Like literally her name was mentioned, you know, along with Tim Burton in terms of the style and presentation of the movie. And so much of that lies in her vision. So this is an easy five for me. And I will pass it to Ryan.
Jamie Babbitt, homegirl. I think this is her first feature. I think she did some short films before this. And then I've not really seen, honestly, anything else outside of some Russian Doll episodes, apparently, and only Murders in the Building episodes that I didn't know were hers. I think, and it's really hard to judge, because I feel like you kind of got to get into, like, the career and the filmography of the director, or if they're first time, then that really becomes, like, the kind of jumping off point. And so, with that kind of viewpoint, I'm probably very positive on this, too. I'll take, since Kyle's been countering me, I'll counter Kyle. He's said this movie isn't for him. And I think why this movie really works so well, and I do feel like even if I'm giving over marks in certain areas, it deserves it. It's because it handles all of it so well, and that it's not alienating. You're right. You're not maybe the target demographic, but it's not alienating towards you. It's not going to put things that are like really off-putting, but yet it's also very authentic and true, and it doesn't hide its gayness and queerness. Like, it's all fucking there without, like, not without, I guess, while still being very accessible, I would think so. And maybe I'm skewed, and like, I've seen so many things where, like, I'm not a good judge of what is for quadrant anymore. I feel like this is very for quadrant, even being very specifically in a kind of niche genre. I think this really works across the board. And I, again, like, if we're going to the style, how everything just successfully works, I think the vibe is right. It handles everything with a very honest lens, but like a delicate sensibility. Like, I think that requires a level of deftness that I don't think every director has. So for that alone, I think this deserves high points. This is a five for me too. A very high five. I'm gonna leave it at that. A very high five. And then we'll close it with, I think, Brian, are you the last one?
I am the last one. Okay. And I don't have anything to say you guys haven't already said. It'd be weird if I was all of a sudden like, it's a one, she's awful.
Yeah, right.
There's a reason that she's getting fives across the board. And it is interesting that her film career really doesn't do much after this. She really finds her home in directing television after this, which I think is unfortunate. Like, she's great. And the things that I've seen that she's directed are great, but I would like to see more of her visual style brought into some of these things, because like, she did 18 episodes of Gilmore Girls, 3 episodes of Malcolm in the Middle, a bunch of episodes of she did 4 episodes Everything. Of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, 3 episodes of It's Always Sunny, 2 episodes of Marvel's Mrs. Maisel, 10 episodes of Only Murders. She's done a ton of work, but I would love to see something else in this vein. Because I really think she nailed that visual style in this, and I want to see more of it. That said, this is fantastic, and while I agree that it's a little meandering at times and could be tightened up a little, it's still a five for me, especially on a $1.2 million budget. That's insane. Five, and we will move right into entertainment value. I will start off by saying this one is all over the fucking map when it comes to the reviews. Rotten Tomatoes, 43% critical.
Whoa. They did not get it.
75% audience. huge
critics
gap.
From 1999. I get it.
Exactly.
Yeah, whereas the audiences would include like modern audiences too reviewing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I totally get it.
That also comes through when you look at Metacritic. It has a 39%. But then you compare that to
that's insane.
The Letterboxd score, which is a 4.0. So the more modern the viewing audience is, the higher the score is. It has a 6.9 on IMDb. So that, like I said, it's anywhere from
nice
a 39% to an 80%, depending on who you're looking to.
I can't believe IMDb was the more rational out of several of the aggregates.
For real. I don't think this is going to be a surprise. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I had a good time with it. I really wish that there was more Jamie Babbitt that I could see. I'm interested in looking at some of her other movies that came out after this, even though I don't think they're going to be as good as this.
Well, the next one is from 2005 called The Quiet.
The Quiet.
And then she waited a whole nother, which I believe is about a lesbian deaf girl. And then the next one after that, I think is from 2012 called Breaking the Girls, which is a lesbian crime thriller.
Yeah. You missed her 2007 movie, Itty Bitty Titty Committee.
I mean, that's I didn't want to spoil what I was watching later.
also going to watch this.
I've given high marks for direction and style and characters, but I actually do think I'm going to drop it down to a 4 for entertainment value, because I do think we could have either done this quicker or added something else in there to make the time investment. I don't know. The pacing feels a little weird at certain spots, and I think that's the only issue I have with it. So it's going to be a 4, a very high 4 for me for entertainment value. And I'm going to send it over to Ryan.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said, except I will not be taking off a point. This is one I kind of also wish I kind of saw and sat on. I'm very fresh on it, but I feel like this is one that's going to grow on me, and one that I could watch again tomorrow and show somebody else, and I think I'd be just A-okay watching it again. And I don't, that's becoming increasingly rare as I get older and see more and more movies that I'd like, oh man, I would watch this again right now. I kind of would watch this one again right now. I really had so much fun with this movie and kind of surprised with how heavy of a subject it could have had potentially. Again, I just go back to how well the tone was handled here. I greatly enjoyed this. This is a 5 for me, and I've talked so much, so I'm not going to keep talking. Kyle.
I like this movie a lot. It was a lot of fun. I'm not as high to rewatch it as some of you guys are. Not to say that I hated it. I kind of feel I got what I got out of it, and I did enjoy it, but I love the runtime, of course. I'm a huge advocate of short runtimes. This clocks in at a quick 125, I think, even with credits.
With credits, yeah.
Incredibly short, so big bonuses there. I did laugh. I did feel. It worked. There's some really nice shots. I like the one where she's sitting with her arms crossed and she's rubbing Natasha Lyonne's arm. It's just, I was at like a 3, but I think I'm going to bump up to a 4. I really did have an overall enjoyable time, and I'm not in a hurry to watch this. But I tell you what, if I did watch it again, I wouldn't hate it. So, I think that's going to bump it up from a baseline to that extra level. I'm not searching it out again, so it's not a 5 or anything like that, but it's a 4, and I'm happy giving it a 4. Am I the last one?
No, I'm Brian. Still here.
No. Sean.
Just keep guessing.
Me. Yeah, homeboy. You're eventually going to get there.
Homeboy.
Homeboy.
Take it.
You should have said that. I would have known it was me.
Yeah, fucked it up.
It is really weird coming in here, and it feels like at this point I'm just beating a dead horse. It feels really weird to come in here speaking so highly of everything just to spoilers, be giving it a 4. And I think
where I'm at
is that there's something. There's like, I thoroughly enjoyed this. There's nothing that I can say about this that I didn't like. Like, looking back on it, and it is one of those I think that's going to grow over time anyways. But there's a feeling, I think, that the movie, okay, this is going to sound weird too, that somehow the movie played it a little safe somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a rated R movie that I was trying to figure out by the end of it why it was rated R. And I guarantee you it's just because of like the 3 hard Fs that were dropped. And that's literally it. And I think there's a flash of like a photo of a nipple or something. But it wasn't any live action stuff. So it left me with a feeling of something was played safe, or I don't know. Some things could have been a little bit more leany in a direction. And I don't... Like, if that's the only quibble I have with it, fine, whatever. But I just was left wanting a little more. Just a little more of something. And I can't say what it is. So for that, like, I can't give it a 5. But this is the most wholehearted I would recommend anyone see this 4 from me.
I'm right there with you. That's exactly what I was trying to articulate, too. Is like, there's just something missing to give it the 5. It's interesting you brought up the rating thing, though, because Jamie Babbitt actually had to really fight to get this an R rating instead of an NC-17, which is insane. Wow. And it's mostly because the 90s MPAA was like, oh, gay stuff, this is automatically not safe for kids.
Yep.
Wow. Yep.
That's the only reason why. Because when Sean said it was rated R, I too was immediately like, I don't really remember anything in this to be a fucking R.
If this came out today, it would be PG-13.
I think so, yeah.
Would it be? That's actually a good topic to talk about on a Patreon. I don't know if it would. I think there's one too many hard Fs. But it would be easy to cut one out and get a PG-13.
This is true.
That's just, man, slurs in PG-13 movies? I don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know actually what the MPAA ruling is on slurs and what even they consider slurs at this point.
What's my quota? Or what's my limit? They have guys limits. Say it one last time. We got to be PG.
All right. Well, we have a total score here, and it is as you could probably predict, higher than everything I read earlier. We gave this movie a 91.
Sorry, y'all.
Very high.
Opinion, but okay.
Like, I would give it very an positive. 8. If I were to give, like, my personal rating on this, I'd give this, like,
that's where I'm at.
It's a solid 8 for me.
I would be firm 9, so this is right for me, at least. But I love this. This is striking all my little auteur boners. I'm loving everything popping off about this movie.
Yeah.
I regret saying auteur boners immediately.
No, it's okay.
I'm sure if anybody has got an auteur boner, it's homegirl.
You know
which
what?
I don't know which homegirl you're talking about now.
You figured it out.
You know what auteur boner makes me imagine is a roided out John Travolta bald wearing a cute little beret. That is what auteur boner looks like.
Yeah. Boy, if I got a pick for you, buddy.
He is an auteur boner. That's a good call. We need to put that picture on all of our social medias, that John Travolta with beret, because the world needs to know what a true auteur boner is. And it's that.
Yeah. Just happy. But guys, thank you. And gals and friendly pals and whoever. I don't honestly give a shit who's listening to us right now. If you are enjoying what you're hearing here and you want some bonus stuff, you want to hear us talk about Robin Williams and how fucking shit his movies are. And also, if you're curious about who AI through personality profiling would guess is Nicolas Cage from The Rock, which one of us is that?
But not hated.
Yeah. head on over to our website, experiencegrind.com. Click on the Patreon link. As little as a dollar, you get a bonus episode every week. And also there's the Discord link. So make sure you pop up in there and tell us that thing that I told you to do somewhere earlier. I don't know. But we'll see you there. Brian. Oh, wait. Who's next week? Ryan.
It's Ryan.
Hi, y'all. I'm going to be continuing Pride Month in a glorious fashion with just an unrepentant comedy. We're gonna have some laughs. We're gonna talk about Bottoms next week, which is a more recent movie. It is Ayo Edebiri and Rachel Sennett, two lesbians who start a high school fight club to pick up girls.
Oh.
It's a lot of fun. Maybe the best unhinged Marshawn Lynch performance ever. So good. I think you're gonna have fun.
The football player?
Yes.
This was almost my pick for this week, so I'm very happy.
Nice.
Can I do that? Wow. Alexander Skarsgård gay movie?
Which one is that?
The one with the motorcycles.
That I don't know this.
Well,
we'll see.
We have time to figure it out. Ryan, I look forward to that pick. And Brian, why don't you take us out with these listeners hop on their phone and go sign up for Patreon and also find out the gay Skarsgård movie.
The gay totally. Skarsgård movie, yeah. Listeners, go gay yourself and then un-gay yourself. Get yourself and then re-get yourself.
It's about the process.
It's all about the process. Go convert yourself.
It's, yeah, there you go. Go convert yourself.